Live from the podcast studio, this is From Long Distance to Marriage with Rich and Andrea. We're a once long distance couple who closed 5,000 miles of distance and are now happily married.
We talk long distance, marriage and relationships. Hi everyone, welcome to episode 76 of From Long Distance to Marriage. This week we've got a really special episode. We're joined for the first time by David Feldman, who you may recall from episode 47, where we dealt with how to avoid criticism in your relationship. Today we kind of on a similar topic, but we looked at how you might cope with or avoid defensiveness.
Well, how to communicate better, you know, to kind of prevent defensiveness.
Yes, so as you'll find out soon enough, it's if you are with someone who has a tendency to become defensive, or equally if you're the person who gets defensive, David gives some really, really useful practical tips on how you can avoid that from the outset, amongst some other things as well. So we'll get into that shortly, but we just wanted to ask, if you enjoy the episode or you enjoy us in general, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review or a rating on your favourite platform, and don't forget to subscribe. Okay. And on that, we will leave you to listen to David.
Enjoy. So we're back with a returning special guest. We've got David Feldman. If you haven't listened to episode 47 of From Long Distance Marriage, you should absolutely check it out. It's our first chat with David. How are you doing? You staying safe and well?
Yes, definitely.
Thank you for returning, by the way. I think you're certainly one of the most popular guests we've had on. And we're always talking about that. We're always saying, listen to this episode.
Referring to it, yeah.
Because I hope other people found this, because I really found it valuable that, yeah, some of the we still talk about it, don't we?
Yeah.
Like in our outside of the podcast, we talk about it in our everyday sort of marriage conversations as well. You know, the hierarchy of needs and I think it, beyond talking about it as well, certainly I think about it, I'm sure you have. There are just some things we just think, that's not the hill I'm going to die on, you know, to sort of borrow your phrase in the episode. And things like that. So it was a really, really powerful conversation for us. So we're really pleased that you wanted to join us again.
And not just powerful, it was so simple. Some of the stuff was so simple. Just, I do find myself asking questions that we talked about, you know, if, you know, the example we used was leaving towels or dirty clothes on the floor or something that. We talked about that a lot. And, you know, both of us have our moments of just leaving things lying around and things like that. And there's been multiple occasions where Rich has done something and I just look at it and I think,
bad Rich.
We're home constantly now. There's just so much more to deal with at home, but I'll look at it and I, you know, whatever it is. And I'll think, what's going to have the easiest outcome? It's going to take me 3 seconds to do this myself, or it can be in a half hour long debate. So I'll just do it, and then it's
You're
fine.
You're lucky; it's only half an hour. It can go for days sometimes.
We're concise.
I don't think it's going to be a prerequisite to listen to episode 47 before this one. But I think anyone who's listening to this now, it would be worthwhile checking that one out too.
Yeah, I think I should listen to it again. I could use that again. So good. Yeah.
Well, just let's the title of that one was about dealing with criticism as well, and I think we'll probably tie that in quite nicely with what we're going to talk about today. But before we get on to that, David, if you want to just say a quick introduction and what you do and what you're up to for listeners who aren't familiar with you.
Sure. So my name is David Feldman, and it's D-O-V-I-D, a little different. And I'm a licensed family and marriage therapist. I practice here in the state of Illinois in the United States, and I also take clients all over the world. Some of my favorite are coming from Greece out of all places right now, so it's kind of exciting. And I have clients in Africa and Canada and, of course, the United States. So it's been such a crazy ride. I started out on Twitter about 2 years ago, really putting out a lot of my thoughts and observations, many of which stem from my client sessions, and it's just been wonderful. My account has grown nicely. I've made some really nice friends, and I connect very, very deeply with those people who choose to reach out to me. And so I have bunch of workshops for couples and for singles. I do focus mainly on marriage situations, but I also work with people just in regular relationships. And even singles that are preparing to get married or dealing with any personal issues. One client I have right now has stopped working with me on the marriage, and she's working with me on family, like her kids and things like that. And that's been a lot of fun. So, yeah, you can reach me easy on Twitter at David Feldman, DOVIDFELDMAN, or you can visit my blog, which is really my pride and joy, because I spend so much time writing articles and putting out content there, most of which is a 3 to 5 minute read, but they're so informative and I use them a lot in my practice. I'll just quickly send an article to somebody who's dealing with a particular issue. So, you know, you can go there and just say hi. And yeah.
That's for good. Twitter's where I first found you too, actually. I'm not sure who threw, like, I'm sure. You're one of those accounts that you're always in my feed. I follow you in it, but I mean, just because the amount of people that share what you post, you're like quite often, I'll open Twitter and you're the first post that I'll see. So, which is obviously sort of a really nice indicator that what you're saying is resonating with people, that they want to share it.
Yeah, it's really nice because I started out on Twitter as kind of like a red pill groupie, you know? I didn't know on Twitter anything. I was a family and marriage therapist, and I wanted to work with men. So next thing you know, I find myself in this corner of Twitter where all the man, you know, the manosphere corner of Twitter, and I'm tweeting around, and it's like somehow my message isn't really resonating with all these guys, you know. And at some point, you know, I was getting into arguments and this and that, and then next thing you know, I got blocked by like everybody.
Yeah, they blocked me too. That could be a really ugly corner of Twitter over there.
And it's just like, all of a sudden I had like this revelatory moment, like this revelation, you know, intervention type moment where I just said to myself, you know what, I can't compete. I can't function in this arena where I feel like my hands are tied behind my back and every person that I'm speaking with has got such opposite perspectives of me. I just don't want to spend my life fighting. So then I just started putting out my own stuff. And thank God it was, you know, sometimes we think the worst things are the worst things, and it was probably the best thing that happened to me on Twitter was just getting blocked by everybody, and then I was able to generate my own audience, and it's been really fun and very meaningful to me, so I'm glad you guys are part of that too.
Yeah, us too. Absolutely. And I think Twitter's a really interesting one because, I mean, people will argue with themselves on Twitter. It's such a funny kind of platform, but you can really curate it to have, just see so much positive influence. And I really think, you know, you're one of those accounts. One of the things we mentioned quite a bit on this podcast is marriage is often spoken about quite negatively in the wider. And I think, you know, you talk about the manosphere, I think they often have that too. Like, why would you get married, you know, and all that
stuff. And pop culture too.
And pop culture. Just, yeah. And so there's some accounts, obviously, that the account we have for this and personally too follow this more positive about it, and so they're definitely out there, I think, you know. But that also makes the, you know, accounts like yours and similar, it makes them all the more valuable because you kind of have to dig a little bit to find them, because there's not millions of them, I guess.
Yeah.
And then you realize, oh, this is what I've been looking for a long time. I'm not crazy for thinking I can have a good marriage. I'm, you know, women are real people.
Have a relationship with your wife, like,
yeah, right, yeah, yeah. She's not just waiting to leave all the time. It's a funny thing, and but anyway, so I'm conscious we haven't got you for a huge amount of time, so I think if we dive into the topic, so we put out last week on Instagram and Twitter. If anyone had anything they wanted to ask you, what they'd ask a licensed therapist if they had the opportunity. And the question that we had that we thought would be a really valuable one for a lot of people.
And just a really commonplace one, yeah.
It was how you would deal with a defensive partner. And I think the
communication
question...
Communication specifically.
Yeah, I was going to say the question wasn't any more specific than that. So potentially we can dive into a couple of different perspectives on it, but certainly I think communicatively, for anyone who's listened to our recent episode about coronavirus,
or coronavirus-related divorce rates, you know, where we mentioned that people are suddenly spending a lot more time together and they realize this isn't what we're used to.
Well, not just spending more time together, spending time together in a really limited...
A stressful
way. Stressful, confined, limited. You know, I mean, we spend... We talk about with ourselves, you know, we spend a lot of time together out of choice. You know, we
like each other.
We like each other. We choose to, you know, to do things with each other first. And but usually that incorporates getting out of the house and going off and doing and seeing things. And so, I mean, I can see how people who don't usually spend time together now suddenly being forced in that situation can struggle. But I think just generally,
and I think
that defense can be a problem.
But what I love about this question, just before we get into it, because I think it works on so many levels. So obviously, we, you know, a lot of our listeners either were or still are long distance, and you're still going to have those couples where someone may be defensive. And it potentially is even more stressful in that position because we were talking to someone recently about this, that if you're long distance and you're in an argument, they can just put their phone down and you're blocked out. You know, you don't know where they are, what's going on. Whereas at least if you're in a house together and you storm off, you know they're still in the house.
Right.
They're still there. So I think potentially that proximity can be... Actually, just to elaborate on that, one thing I see, and I think it's terribly toxic, but I see this quite a lot online, is people saying, oh, anytime I have an argument with my boyfriend or girlfriend, they block me on social media till they calm down.
Unbelievable.
Which is obviously not something you can do, quote-unquote, in real life. So I think just the question of, you know, dealing with someone defensively, I just wanted to kind of front load that question with some potential variances.
Avenues, yeah.
Okay.
So over to you.
Sure. Well, you know, defensiveness is, that is actually, out of all of the communication issues, defensiveness is one of the simpler ones to deal with. And the reason why is because first we have to back up and take a look at the overall structure of communication between a man and a woman, or this could go with a boss and a sibling, you know, a boss and an employee or anything. But basically, it's well known in our industry and that 95% of the reaction that you're going to get is based off of the way you initiate the conversation. So that means that I can pretty much guarantee how I'm going to be responded to by the way I show up in my communication. And so I'm not saying that there are not people who have innate defensive tendencies, for sure. And that's definitely something that has to be looked at. And we can talk, and we will talk about that. But before we get there, the vast majority of circumstances where defensiveness shows up is because the person initiating the conversation is acting as a catalyst for that defensiveness to appear.
Mm.
And they just don't realize that. It doesn't mean that they're bad people, and it doesn't mean that they don't have something very important to say, and it doesn't mean that they're wrong or anything. It doesn't mean any of that. It just means that there's certain ways and triggers that we use commonly that will invoke a defensive response. And how much more so when it's from partner to partner, where there's so much emotional tension and the relationship is valuable, so there's so much at stake. And oftentimes the conversations can be deeply personal. So that's the first thing. We have to realize that if we're finding that our partner is defensive, there's a really good chance that on accident we are trying to communicate something important, but unfortunately we're using a methodology that is instigating that response.
Yeah, that's so, it seems so simple when you say it like that. But it's well, so powerful.
You have to say that quote from your brother again.
It's exactly what I was thinking of, and we probably talked about this when we had you on the show before, David, but when Rich and I got married, my brother had also just got married a few months before, since divorced, but remarried in a very happy relationship now. And, you know, we had obviously different strains. You know, we were both living in our own place the first time. I had immigrated, you know, so there was a lot going on, a lot of change. And I remember just feeling like, you know, Rich and I could not talk, could not resolve anything without it becoming a huge argument. And one day I just called my brother and just talking like, oh, it's really hard. Like, I just don't know how to talk without arguing. And it's really difficult. And, you know, kind of just venting a little bit. And he said, you know, I'm not too much further along than you in this marriage game. But he said, as far as I can tell, it's all about saying what you need to say, but in a way that your partner can hear it.
Mm.
And that actually takes a lot of thought, because I think there's a struggle. I think a lot of people feel like, oh, I don't want to have to walk on eggshells. But you know, you do need to be mindful of your partner's feelings too, because if they've done something and you want to comment on it or whatever the situation is, if you say something and like you say, you're the catalyst for them taking it in a, you know, with a defensive kind of attitude,
mm-hmm.
you don't want to hurt their feelings. You don't want to make them feel defensive. You were just trying to communicate something about what you need or something along those lines. That's usually what it comes back to loosely.
Mm-hmm.
And it just takes a little bit of thought to say, okay, what can I say that still gets my point across? It doesn't have to be snide or sarcastic. or just
even if you don't mean any of those things anyway, if you've had any experience with that particular person, you don't like, I think a lot of it for us was we had practice with each other to know, actually, if I say it that way, you in particular may react badly. Not that I've said it with any malice, but I just know that it's not the way you hear it.
Yeah.
Maybe my tone or whatever. So
and
I
that,
think
that takes time.
That takes time.
Yeah, then. Getting to know each other and what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, for sure. And in you know what, the thoughtfulness and everything, you know, all the things that you're mentioning, like being thoughtful and trying to get your point across without offending the other person and stuff like that, that's all true on what I would say a more macro level. But on a practical level, there are actually things that you can do, simple steps that you can take that could practically guarantee you won't get a defensive response. And I'd be happy to...
Take notes, babe.
This is when he says there's
sure. Well, I have it on my... I'll send you the link on my website. I wrote a whole guide, and it's pretty straightforward. And I can send you that link also just for your own relationship. I need to read it myself again. I can never, you know, it's one thing to say it, but it's another thing to practice it. You know, there's four, the main, I have something what I call on my web, in this article that I wrote, I have a phraseology that I like to use, which is called relationship-oriented communication. So that's the basic umbrella that we use to describe communication that won't be between you and your beer drinking buddies or your soccer playing, you know, your football guys. You for those guys, you're just gonna, you know, speak however you want, and it's mm-hmm. all good. But when you're speaking to your wife or when she's speaking to you, it's called relationship oriented communication. And there's a shift that occurs in those relationships. And the primary shift that occurs is that we must always, and this goes back to the previous episode, but it's the same concept, we must always strive to create what's called two things. Number one, a judgment-free zone. So there is no judgment in whatever I communicate to you. There is no way that I am in any way implying or saying anything that would make you feel like I'm judging you. So that's the number one principle. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the second thing is that, the second primary principle is that I take full responsibility for my own emotional state. It these may sound complicated. They're not. They're actually quite easy. And when we put together a couple sentences, you'll see right away that it's pretty straightforward. There's nothing complicated about it. But when I describe it, it sounds like all may sound like all scientific or something, but it's not. The first thing is, again, that we create a judgment-free zone. There's no way that my statement is in any way going to imply, even in the most tangential way, that I'm judging you or that you did something wrong or you're a bad person or stupid or an idiot or any of those things. The second thing is that I'm fully responsible for my own emotions. And now when I can do those two things, it's really hard for you to be judgmental because, I'm sorry, it's really hard for you to be defensive because I haven't accused you of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't accuse you of anything. I'm just informing you of a piece of information. And so, and that makes all the difference. I mean, it's almost to the point where if somebody was defensive, it would almost be like a non sequitur. It wouldn't even be appropriate for the sentence that I could put forth.
Right.
So did you want to comment on that?
No.
It makes perfect sense. I don't think it sounds scientific or confusing or anything like that, but I think it might help to elaborate just in case, you know, anyone listening doesn't understand what we mean by being responsible for, like, your own emotions. I mean, I think I understand it, but could you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, that there's nothing, being responsible for your own emotions means that there's nothing that your partner did to you that made you feel any way.
Okay.
Doesn't mean that you don't feel a certain way. It just means that I'm disassociating the relationship between what you did, causality between what you did and how I feel.
Okay.
So that means that if I feel something, that's on me.
Yeah.
And I'm letting you know that. I can give you some examples. It's really quite straightforward. It's not really complicated, but I'll give you some examples. So there's four parts to this process. There's the first thing is that what we do is we always use what's called I statements. So what we do is let's back up. The first thing is that we take a look at what the problem of the situation. Let's use the example of the towels. We can use that one again, or you can come up with a different one. If you want to use that one, we can use that one.
Tried and true. Let's stick to it.
All right. So Rich gets out of the bathroom, dumps his towels all over.
Can I just, this is hypothetical example from the last episode. And not
his towel always goes on the radiator.
You said it last one too. I think you said the exact same thing.
I did. Yeah, my reputation's on the line here.
Yeah. So what you want to do is Rich's towel's all over the floor, it's wet. Now there's a wet spot on the floor, like the whole deal, right? And it's been there for, 17 hours already, and he doesn't bother picking it up. So
I've been counting. 17.
Yeah, exactly. So what you want to do is you want to just, instead of saying, Rich, you left your towels on the floor, you want to just say, I noticed the towel on the floor. You're so sensitive to him that you're not even saying that he dropped it on the floor. You're not even saying his towel. You just say, I noticed this towel on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
There's no defensiveness there. You're just saying you'd notice the towel on the floor.
But would you say, and I picked it up, or would you leave that hanging there?
No, because what you're trying to do is when you're trying to communicate, what you really want to do is you don't want Rich to keep putting the towels on the floor, and you want to share with him that it was annoying and bothersome to you that the towel was on the floor, right? Have I got that situation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, so Rich, I noticed this towel on the floor. When I see it there, it makes me feel, and then you describe your feeling.
Right.
Okay, or when I see it there, I feel this. I feel
like you expect me to pick it up or, whatever.
No. It's a feeling word. See, what you just said is not a feeling word. That's a thought.
Okay.
Because you're projecting onto him what you think he thinks about you. Now there's a room for him to get defensive. I wouldn't think that. Okay. I never left there.
I've been living with for all these years.
This never happened. This is just me guessing how I would say it. And I'm learning that's wrong.
Right. So you say, Rich, I notice this towel on the floor. When I see it there, I feel frustrated because I love the room being clean. And that means a lot to me.
Yeah.
No blame at all. You're not saying that leaving towels on the floor is bad. You're not
saying
that.
Can we semi role play this for a second? If I was to get defensive and say, well, I'm busy, why don't you pick it up? Or do you know what I mean? Maybe there is something I can respond to that's not the positive response she would have hoped for in that situation. Where would you go from there?
Okay, so she's not finished with the sentence, so let her finish. Okay. If he would interrupt, I would encourage a partner just to let me finish. Okay? Mm-hmm. Just you know, is it okay if I finish? So again, the first part is the description of the event. Rich, I noticed his towel on the floor. There's no defensiveness there, right?
Yeah.
There's no accusation there. Number two, a feeling. When I saw it there, I felt frustrated because I love a clean room, and when I see it there, it makes me feel disrespected, or you could say it makes me feel sad because I love it when our room is clean. It's pretty straightforward. It makes me feel sad because I love it when our room is clean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're just sharing a feeling. You're not accusing him. He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything bad. You're just letting him know how you feel when this event happened. And then the third thing would be a behavioral change request. Do you think it would be possible if you were able to be more conscientious about picking up your towels or picking up towels? If you see a towel on the floor, pick it up in the future. Is that something you're able to do? Okay, yeah. So that's the third part, right? So you're not demanding he do it. You're not forcing him. You're not shaming him. You're just asking him nicely if it would be possible in the future, now that he knows how you feel about it. He didn't do anything wrong, right? But
no.
Would it be possible in the future if he could help you by picking up a towel? And then the fourth piece is we always preface everything with what's called a goodwill statement. So before you start saying, Rich, I noticed this towel on the floor, you would say, I'm sure you meant nothing by this, or I'm sure that you care about this as much as me, or I'm sure you would never mean to hurt my feelings, or I'm sure you let this slipped by you without you noticing. So let's just put it all together. It's pretty straightforward. Rich, I am 100% sure that you would never do anything to hurt me, or that you certainly didn't mean to make a mess or anything like that. I did notice this towel on the floor. When I see it there, I get frustrated because it means so much to me that the room is clean. Would it be possible for you in the future to make an effort to pick up anything that you see lying on the ground?
Love it.
Yeah.
But so what if I then said, no, you know, I work really long hours, or why is it a big deal? Or I said, yeah, that's fine, kind of brushed it off, but didn't change the behavior.
Okay. Well, let's address one thing at a time. First of all, there's no sentence in there to be, just let's just agree on one thing.
The defensiveness is purely because I'm just that way inclined.
Yeah, but I'm saying even your response isn't defensive. You're entitled to say no. That's not defensive. Okay. Right? I'm saying defensiveness would be, I didn't do it.
Sure.
But she's not saying you did it. She's
so just separating disagreement from defensiveness.
Here. Yeah, yeah, you're entitled. Look, your partner can ask you for a million things, right? But that doesn't mean you have to say yes. Just mm-hmm. because your partner asks you if you're possible to do something, the answer could be no. It's not possible for me to do it. I mean, you know, then you got to work it out with your partner. Like, it could be that gets her upset or whatever, but you don't have to do everything your partner asks you to do. I mean, but the point here is that you're authentically communicating. You're saying, this is what I noticed. This is how I feel. I trust that you wouldn't hurt me, and I'm wondering if you can change. It's just that simple.
See, I think we've gone into a really important point that I hadn't thought we would go to, which is that I wonder how many people end up in the arguments because I'm trying to think how to phrase this, sorry, this is really muddled, but if in this instance Andrew's instigating the conversation and she said everything you just said and it's perfectly reasonable and I reasonably respond no for whatever reason, but then it becomes an argument because she didn't want to hear no, and then it becomes a point of winning. I wonder how much of, in some instances of what may be deemed as defensiveness is actually you didn't get the answer you were looking for, and it became something else.
I mean, I can relate to that because not like in this scenario, but I know that there's been times I've wanted to raise a topic. I can't think of any examples, but just, you know, something that I know maybe I need to be really thoughtful and kind of very similar kind of approach to what, you know, you kind of laid out. And I've really put a lot of thought into, right, I'm going to say this. That doesn't come across as nasty or mean or judgmental or anything like that, and then it still gets the same reaction, or as maybe it would if I just said, like, why the hell are you doing this, you know, or something like that, probably because it's conversations that have happened over time again and again and again.
But I think potentially that may be how I respond. What I'm saying here in response to Dobbin's example is I could politely and reasonably say, actually, I can't do that because of these reasons.
Yeah.
I think there may be quite a lot of people out there who just don't want to hear the no.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I'm asking you a perfectly reasonable thing here, and you're telling me no. And do you see what I mean? Like, that then becomes the argument. So the request was fine, the response was fine, but the requester didn't want to hear a no at all.
Yeah. I would say that I would have to politely disagree with both of you on this.
Okay.
I'd say that most of the problems that occur is that the way it's said is eliciting a negative reaction. I can just tell you from my own marriage, there's almost nothing. If my wife uses the right tone of voice and looks at me in the right way, I don't know if there's anything I wouldn't do for her. I mean, I don't know if there's anything I wouldn't do for her. I maybe if I have like this conference call with you right now, or this podcast with you right now, and she says, can you run to the store to pick up some milk right now? I would have to say no. But I'm just saying, like, so much of what we're married and we like to serve each other. We like to make each other happy, right? That's why we're married.
Yeah. Mm.
And most people, you know, rarely, in my experience, most people, if it's said properly, which is, like I said, it's not hard. I know it may sound difficult. Like, it may sound like I'm mechanicalizing it at all, but it's not. It's just, you know, an affirmation of goodwill. I love you. I care about you. I know you're in this relationship. You're the best. I noticed this thing. This is how it makes me feel. I'm wondering if we could change this. It's not complicated at all. There's no defensiveness. Most of the time, you're going to get a yes. You might not get the exact yes that you want. Like, for instance, if you say, I know that, can you change this by 2:15 today? They may say, no, I can do it by 3:15. But who's going to, you know, if it's with, and again, within reason, you know.
Which is a loophole for the person that
No. I was just wondering if the answer was a no with a valid reason,
mm-hmm.
how Andrea should respond to that. Is that okay? I take that on board, or I'll try again next week, or what would you do there?
Okay, so now we're moving into a completely different topic, which is how do we show up in the relationship when we don't get what we want?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so our feelings aren't hurt. No one, he wasn't mean to me. He's not a bad person. I just am not getting my needs met.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a completely different conversation, and I'm happy to just briefly touch on it.
Well, so about just to clarify that we're on the same page, it's not getting the needs met from the request you had that was declined, and so you're taking that as
It could be about anything. It could be about sex, it could be about money, it could be about kids, it could be about towels on the floor, it could be about how you're treating your mother-in-law, it could be anything, right?
Okay, like,
so the question is when Andrea asks me something nicely and properly and I'm not defensive, but my answer is no, what happens?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So, first of all, this is a big part of what my must-have marriage pyramid is all about, right? Because if you're on your must-have marriage pyramid, you could say to yourself, okay, well, is this a priority for me? Is this something I'm willing to, because now it means that we have a choice. We can either escalate this properly or we can let it go.
Right.
Those are our choices. Right? Escalating it would look like sharing more feelings and prioritizing. So having some sort of meeting about it, or perhaps he doesn't understand how important this is to you, or maybe you can negotiate for something like, okay, I get you don't want to do carpool, but I'll do the shopping, or, you know, whatever it is that you guys are working on. I mean, you can strategize on ways to come up with maybe there's some sort of blockage that meaning further conversation would be necessary, and that would be like some sort of higher level meeting about this particular issue, which is perfectly normal. So you could set up and say, okay, well, you know, I'm not comfortable with no, I'd like to talk to you about it more in depth at some point. That's all. And then you'd have to have a respectful, you know, meeting about the issue. That can be done. That's not that complicated. You guys talk about stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But the charge has been taken out of it because no one's defensive. It's clear. There's an issue of towels on the floor. You know, maybe, Rich, you're just too busy or you've got ADD or whatever it is. And maybe you're willing to say, you know, I'll do the dishes every single night, but I can't do the towels. It's not something I can do. I can't be held responsible for that because if I say yes, I'm going to fail. And if I fail, you're going to get upset. And then we're going to fight. So I've got a better idea. I'll take out the garbage, do the dishes, and mow the lawn every single day. And you take care of the towels. And she'll say, okay, that makes sense. I can live with that. I mean, you're dealing with an issue. You're not dealing with your defensiveness at this point. Or the second option is that we let it go. And we just say, picking up the towels is something I'm willing to do for the sake of a happy marriage. And that's just it. You know, I tried. I expressed myself. It doesn't look like he's willing to budge on this. This isn't something, like you said before, I'm not willing to bet the farm or whatever the phrase was that we used before, risk it all over this particular issue.
Yeah,
that I like makes perfect that. Sense.
And what I like about this is you're giving power to the person with, I'm going to use the phrase, the problem. I know it's not the exact, you know, the most appropriate phrase, but the person who's initiating that conversation and is worried about the response they're going to get can now feel more empowered that I can be in control of this situation going into it, which I think leads on to a question Andrea had, if you want to.
Yeah, so I mean, one thing that we talk about, I think it comes up in a lot of different episodes and something we both strive to work on just as people, well, I guess as spouses, and that's just being a little bit more like self-aware of maybe our part in any misunderstandings or arguments and kind of taking responsibility for actions in the marriage. So say,
well, I'm thinking about this example here is how did, you know, did I phrase that properly? Was my tone aggressive?
I was literally just, so I was just going to say, so that would be me coming in and saying like, why the hell can't you pick up your stupid towels? I'm so sick of this conversation. And then if he explodes,
he gets defensive, right?
Yeah. Then, you know, I need to be able to step back and go, okay, I've handled this really, really badly. And then, so on the other side, if I am phrasing it right, you know, I'm sure you didn't mean to do anything to upset me with this. I did notice some towels on the floor. It makes me feel frustrated because I sleep better in a clean room. And would you be able to kind of maybe pick up the towels going forward? And
that's perfect. Good for you.
I've learned from the best. And and then Rich, you know, then I think part of that, like you said, most people are going to find that's completely reasonable. It's not difficult for me to pick up my towel. Yeah, I'll do that.
Or maybe
but
not.
That also requires a little bit of self-awareness. Oh, it makes my wife feel sad and like she can't get a good night's sleep because the room's messy. I don't want to do that, of course. You know, so
exactly.
It goes both ways. And I think sometimes you have to take that inward, I don't know. Yeah, that introspection of like, oh, I've done this. It's caused X, Y, Z. And then learning from that. And I think that's really, really hard. And I think if you're going into a situation, you're the one bringing it up. Like, I'm going to Rich about the towels on the floor. I have time to think about that.
So the argument isn't caused by the response. The argument's caused by the instigation.
Essentially, yeah, if it's phrased wrong. But I think everyone should strive to do that. It's really difficult. But I think one thing that I want to work on, it doesn't happen. You know, Rich doesn't come to me really accusingly. You know, maybe something offhand might be, you said, like, you just don't put the thought, like, oh, why can't you do this? But I think what I like to try to do is, like, it sounds really contradictory to what you said earlier, and maybe it's wrong. Maybe this isn't what we should be trying to do or people shouldn't be trying to do. You know, you said, you know, I'm responsible for my own feelings. But is it fair to say that the things I do can affect how they feel? I mean, and take ownership for that? Or is that putting too much on yourself?
Wait, 100, okay, 100% right. Whatever you call big mix of what you just said, I agree 100%. But let's make a distinction here. You are what I find to be the best combination is I am 100% responsible for the way I feel, and I'm 100% responsible for the way you feel.
Oh, good.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So when I adopt that attitude, the truth is I'm not, you know, if we both adopt that attitude, then you can have a great, great relationship.
Yeah.
You know, and I would never look at my partner who's upset at me and say, well, I don't know why you're angry at me. I mean, I can't make you angry, right? Like, you know, you're angry just because you're angry. It's nothing to do with me. Like, that's not, that wouldn't be a sensitive statement. Although I can't say I've never said that, but I could say I shouldn't have said that. That's for sure. Yeah, we don't have that attitude about our partners, you know? Why are you coming to me? I mean, if you're feeling upset, just like look in the mirror and deal with it, you know? We don't say that. And to your other point, you know, in general, I would say whenever there's, just for your own benefit, on a deeper psychological level, the reason why we get upset about something is because it's usually touching something in us that hurts. And there's something that, like, for instance, let's go back to the towel as an example, right? So you're claiming that you sleep better at night because of a clean room, and that may be true. But let's just pretend that there's more to it, right? Maybe let's just pretend that when Rich leaves the towel on the floor, you feel dishonored. And you felt that feeling of being dishonored before, maybe, and I'm just playing games over here, but maybe in fourth grade, you were excluded from the cool girls club, and you felt like you were lost, and you didn't have friends, or the friends you had weren't the friends you wanted, or the ones that you wanted, you know, made fun of you, or just never really accepted you, or maybe you had a good friend that did that to you, just tossing stuff out. And so when Rich leaves the towels on the floor, here comes the story. Nobody sees me. Nobody cares how I feel. Nobody's paying attention to my needs. I'm unloved. I'm not wanted. And I'm all alone. And that's what you see when you see the towel on the floor.
Yeah.
So it behooves you, just for yourself, if you wake up in the middle of the night and you step on this cold, wet towel, and all of a
sudden... I'd be a shock to the system.
I wouldn't have a good night's sleep that
night. No.
And you start...
You wake up with a wet towel on your face.
And these feelings start coming up for you. For your own self. Forget about Rich. You know, just for your own self, it behooves you to say, okay, this thing got me really triggered. I mean, it's a towel on the floor. Why am I reacting, you know, on such a deep level?
Yeah.
And then, you know, for you to take a few minutes and think about, you know, and the fun is, I find, for me, you know, I'm allergic to any type of pain or anything, so I hate painful moments. But the funnest part of a painful moment is that when you turn the corner from that pain and all of a sudden you're just like, oh my gosh, I could care less about towels on the floor. Mm-hmm. And it's like the most exciting time in your life because you're just like, holy cow, for 30 years I've been pissed off about towels on the floor, and guess what? I don't have to worry about it at all. I can have as many towels on the floor as I want, and it's not going to make any difference to me at all. I mean, I still want a path to the bathroom, but I mean, the towel isn't going to bother me. And then you're free. And this is all your own personal work. It has nothing to do with Rich.
I also think that something really exciting about those kind of moments of realization is that if you feel you're in a position to share that with your partner, that, you know, I was thinking about this and it unearthed some things that I didn't realize affected me. And I just wanted to let you know for maybe two reasons. Firstly, because, you know, just to kind of reiterate the fact that you weren't doing anything wrong by leaving the towels on the floor. It was just a trigger for me. But also, maybe your knowledge of this about me is good for you to have, just to know something that I've been through, or maybe if I react this way in the future about something, mm-hmm. you can understand that, oh, this isn't about, maybe it's dishes in the sink next time, or maybe it's, you know, a certain word. But I think when you have those opportunities to learn about each other, it's so powerful. And we had a few moments like that recently. You know, I've suffered with anxiety my whole life, and I think some things I just don't even know are kind of a trait of mine because of anxiety, because it's been there for so long. And we were talking about something, and I mentioned how just like a simple daily task is really, really, really difficult for me because of anxious thoughts or whatever. And I had no idea. I'd never told Rich that. I had no idea that it was different from anyone else's, because that's all I know. And Rich said, like, maybe a couple days later, like, I never realized that this was so difficult for you because of your anxious thoughts. And that gives me some really valuable information and helps me understand you better. And those kind of things, I think, are so valuable in a marriage. And also, it's just nice to learn new things about each other.
It's funny, you know, like pretty 10 years this year we've been living together.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the kind of thing, obviously, I knew from before we lived together that Andrea had anxiety and that. And so I knew that. So you probably had the assumption that I knew the extent of it.
Yeah.
And I knew the extent of how bad it could be, but not, she'd never really said, this is how it affects me.
Like a daily life.
I just knew, you know, she'd tell me, I'm anxious now. This makes me anxious. I'm this and that. But not how deep it would go. Not how tired it would make you. Not how laborious a really simple task would become. You know, so, yeah, and you just think, it makes you realise that even after 10 years, that's something you deal with every day. I didn't know.
And it can be an aha moment for you in this position to maybe you kind of look back at certain behaviours that you've seen.
And it helps me be more empathetic. And go,
oh, gosh, okay, so this is why you did this, or you feel this way, or you act this way. Okay. And it kind of clear up
and it just highlights why the communication is so important, because
absolutely
you can imagine that I don't think it was a sticking point, but it's the kind of, I think it's an example of how something can become a sticking point, where you just have this something in your relationship that you just keep arguing about. Neither of you is really able to budge on it, but one of you feels like the other one's got all the information and the other one has no idea there's more information to be had. I suppose you kind of want to hide into nothing, because until that's communicated, suddenly the other person's not just an arsehole, they just didn't know. And now they can kind of say, oh, I'm really sorry, you know, I'll make that effort. Now I know I didn't mean to treat you that way, but I can see why you thought I was being insensitive.
Yeah.
And the other person's thinking, you know, oh, it was as simple as that for me to bring, and I thought you already knew, and whatever. And it's just one example of, I'm sure, thousands, but it was just something that you would imagine me as the husband of 10 years would know that, and I didn't.
But yeah, you can only work with what information you're given and what you can observe, and if that's not shown or communicated effectively on my part, you know, there's not much that
and
can be done
when,
with that.
Yeah, when you're in that anxious state, you're not expected to be highly communicative anyway.
Yeah, you know, things don't always come out the way you'd like them to when you're in that state. But I mean, I think even just on that example, I think that I've noticed changes in how I express the way I'm feeling about something if I'm anxious. It's usually nothing to, I don't think it's ever been anything that Rich has done to make me feel anxious.
Well, and just on that point, so, I mean, you going back to something David, you said earlier on about, you know, a safe space and no judgment, you know that exists here, but if that conversation had happened 9 years ago, it would have been a nice sort of proving ground that you could have said that I responded in the appropriate manner, and then I made some changes in future conversations, and then it demonstrates to you, this is a safe space for me to share how I'm feeling and these thoughts and things, and they'll be heard properly and responded to properly. And
but I just think those types of moments can be a real catalyst for those positive behaviors going forward. So now if I'm doing something, I'm more aware of it if it's tied to my anxiety, and then I stop and reflect on like why I'm doing that, and then what else that might be affecting, and then I communicate it more openly to Rich, and then Rich is very understanding of it because he now has this kind of new knowledge of the way I operate and the way my brain works and the way things can kind of get blown out of proportion in my head because of anxiety. And I think perhaps it could help people to talk about this. I mean, this is just something that came up. It wasn't a sticking point with us. It wasn't something we were arguing about. It was just kind of an observation of how I dealt with something. But if there is something like that, you know, that you're triggering past traumas to me, etc., it just helps things going, paves things a lot smoother going forward, I think. And it almost, I think what makes people feel defensive is because they feel like, oh, I'm responsible for this. You think I've done this horrible thing. But if there's almost like this third party thing, those girls being mean to me in school, my anxiety, it almost gives you something common to work against together, if that makes sense, like a common enemy.
Yeah, that's a great point.
We went to where it was, it's not me against you,
it's us against them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We against
them. Yeah, it's like a team. Yeah, you're a team, essentially. And so if you can identify that, look, the problem isn't between us, it's this other kind of, these other feelings and these other traumas or, you know, whatever it is, and then you can have a unified front and work through it together. And I think that's something that we're just recently learning on that side of things, which has been really interesting.
That's wonderful. I know my wife has this new phrase, started about a year ago, where, you know, she'd come into my office or call me on the phone, and when I got home from work, she'd barrage me with a whole list of things that she's concerned about, you know. And sometimes I handle it like a champ, and sometimes I'm just like, whoa, like, back off, you know. And sometimes I'm just like, even worse, I'm, you know, I would start kind of arguing the details of the things that she was nervous about. And that was like, that was the worst out of all three. Like, I would say, well, oh, that, you don't need to be, you know, I got that covered. You don't need to be worried about that. Why are you so concerned, you know? And finally, she did exactly what you were talking about, Andrea. She said, she's underlying these lists of things that I attack you with is fear.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid. And she said, I have insecurities that are not being addressed. So when you see me behaving like this, rather than getting upset or defensive or pushy or reclusive, the list could go on. I did a lot more than that. Aggressive.
Marriage is a lot of work.
She said, just say to me, you know, just ask me, what are you afraid of?
Mm.
And I started doing that. And it's like, taking the air out of a tire. It's like, you know, all of a sudden, you know, this big, bad, angry woman who greets me at the door is turning into this little cuddly teddy bear who's just got some fears, you know, and it just diffuses. And I think you're right, the way you said it, it's like us against, you know, then all of a sudden it's like me and her working on what her fears are. And I'm much easier for me to deal with that. Oh, that bill you don't have to worry about, we'll pay it from this account, and you don't have to worry about that. You know, it's a completely different energy. So I applaud you for having that self-awareness and then bringing it to Rich's attention to create more peace in your family. It's wonderful.
Well, this is what's so nice about marriage is because it's long-term, you really have that time for things to unfold, and you can you can make the mistakes and adjust them, and it's just this constant...
Learning.
Constant learning about who your partner is and what motivates them and worries them, like you said, and it's just you have the time to course correct, you know, and which I think is great.
Yeah, and I think, David, one of the things you talked about in the previous episode is, and you kind of touched on it briefly, talking about your Twitter escapades getting blocked, but you like to kind of talk about men working on their marriage and what men can do and kind of shying away from this almost toxic masculinity sort of thing that's happening. Yeah, boo on that. We don't like that. But I think one thing that husbands can do that is so valuable is what you just said, that, you know, you've been doing for your wife. She said to you, look, this is what this is, and I need you to do this. And I think women can get really frustrated with men, you know, not to gender stereotype, but I think I've seen this a lot. I think it is quite true. Men like to problem solve, and women like to just get things off their chest and vent. We just need to talk about it. I don't need you to just fix this for me necessarily. Just validate that what I'm feeling is a real thing, and then tell me it's going to be okay. And, but men, well, no, but we could this and this and this and the formula and da da da. And I think Rich does something really good for me where that comes in handy when I've had that kind of obsessive thought and it was about something very clear. It would be a very similar thing, like, well, what are you worried about with this? And I'd say, well, I'm worried about this. And he'd say, oh, okay, well, if that happens, we just do this. And then he knows how my mind works that, well, okay, you say that, but then what if this happens? And then what if this happens? And he had an answer for every single what if. And eventually I got so tired of coming up with these scenarios that I'm like, okay, that's better.
I had to learn how to phrase it because some people you can say, what's the worst that can happen? And they'll say, oh, yeah, it's not a big deal. Andrea has something to say.
I have a lot of them. I have a lot of first things.
There's something like, well, I'll get fired. I was like, well, you won't.
Everything ends in World War III. Like,
I'm good at catastrophizing things.
I'm conscious of your time here, David. So I think if you have any closing thoughts on what we've been talking about here.
Yeah.
It's been fantastic.
I do enjoy speaking with you too.
It's actually a weekly thing. We'll just expand this to be the Dobbit podcast as well.
I just want to add just a little bit more to what we were saying just a second ago about marriage. And you mentioned the long term. And you two don't have children, is that correct?
No, we don't.
Okay. So I just want to share with your listeners and with you two that, the journey. Not only is it an infinite journey to understand the depth of your partner's emotional world, I mean, that, like you two were mentioning, that it just, you keep peeling away layers and layers and layers. But also, life has a cycle to it. And there are different things that occur to couples through the course of their marriage that bring out brand new aspects of who they are as a person, which you may be shielded from until those things happen. So for instance, the birth of a child. I mean, I had no idea. There were things I learned about my wife once the baby was born that I had no access to before. It just wasn't going to, she didn't even know.
Yeah.
That's just an example. A sickness that could happen. Right? A sickness can happen. I know that my mother got terminally ill, and my father's whole personality changed, and the way he related to my mother completely shifted. And life is a way of, I know we tend to get in our little zone, and, hopefully we're doing successful there, and we're happy, of course. And life has a way of bringing lots of joy, and it also has a way of bringing lots of challenges that go beyond what we're used to right now. So marriage is never about it's not only about facing what's happening to us right now, but it's also about the challenges that are going to happen to us in the future, and they will be there. Developing these skills and your ability to have a broader perspective on the journey that you take with your partner throughout life, through all the different phases, is a healthy mindset to keep in mind, and to keep focusing on. You're never going to, there'll be many things you don't find out about your partner until they actually happen. And your partner may also not know how they're going to respond to things until they happen. And when you take a step back and say, you know what, this is a long haul. Like, this is my soulmate. This is somebody who I'm going to traverse all these different exciting, stages of development with, then you have a more mature and a more accepting perspective.
Yeah, I 100% agree. We haven't had to deal with anything like sickness. And I know, one day there'll be loss of parents and things like that. And kind of those things aside, those are really challenging things. But there's also smaller challenges, just the day-to-day stuff that, maybe job, finances, things that are still trying, but maybe aren't as trying on you as a person and you as a couple as other things. But I think trying to look at the things that you're discovering about your partner in a positive way, it can be really thrilling. I learned something new about Rich, and maybe it's a character trait that I didn't know was there, or an intense distaste for something, or a way he reacts to something. And I just think, like, oh, this is amazing. I never knew this about you. And then it's
one thing she learned recently was that I make faces at the dog. We're at the vet. She had no idea. It's not a frequent thing, but he was getting his vaccinations at the vets, and I don't know what it was, and I made a face at him, and she's like, I had no idea you did.
No, I was just like, what are you doing? And he goes, I make face at the dog. And I was like, I've never seen you do this. We've had this dog for 8 years, and I didn't know you did it. And
like I said, it's not all the time.
I meant more serious things, but I mean, that is an example.
It's very cute.
But it is, I think it's those little insights, amidst all this big stuff, these challenging marriage conversations. But just seeing things and observing new things about your partner, whether they're big, whether they're insignificant, whatever, it's sometimes you just see something and you think, like, oh yeah, that's something different about you I didn't know, and tuck it away.
But yeah, this has been wonderful. Thank you for joining us again. We
sure.
will have all the links to you and your Twitter and your website in our
okay.
show notes.
Great. Yeah, I have an article in communication, so it's if anybody's interested, it's just laid out like clear as day.
Yeah, we will
totally.
We'll 100%
share
put
that
in
yeah.
our notes, and hopefully we can make this a trilogy at some point.
Okay, great. Looking forward.
Brilliant.
And I'm still working on my podcast, so one day you two will be guests on mine.
Fantastic.
Yes,
we'll look
yes.
forward to it.
Listen, we've got plenty of time right now, especially.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so
Have
much.
Have a good
it's
rest of your day.
My pleasure. You
Thanks.
Too.
Bye.